Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded January 17th, 2024. Well, January 11th marks the first anniversary of the arrest of the Santa Marta Five in El Salvador. Known as the Water Defenders, the Five were instrumental in bringing about a 2017 national ban on mining in the country. But now political winds have shifted, with current office holders eager to reverse the ban. Part of that determination apparently includes using the courts to neutralize inconvenient impediments. Over the past week, transnational environmental and social justice organizations mobilized in defense of the five men, manifesting demonstrations in Toronto, Ottawa, Vancouver, and Washington, D.C. Press conferences were called, letter campaigns launched, and State of Deception, an exhaustive report on the findings of an international delegation investigating the charges, was released. Pedro Cabezas took part in the virtual press conference, along with John Cavana and others. Pedro is coordinator of the Central American Alliance on Mining, while John, as well as being a past UN economist, is currently a senior advisor at the DC-based Institute of Policy Studies. Both are co-authors of the Water Defenders Report, State of Deception, a fact-finding report on El Salvador's detained water defenders, the potential return of environmentally destructive mining, and the state of human rights under the Bukele administration. John Cavana and Pedro Cabezas in the first half. And for the last 100 and more days and nights, Israel has visited hell upon the heads of the people of Gaza. That what it's doing is an outrage against humanity is beyond question and indefensible, and yet the bombing continues. Millions around the world have taken to the streets and public places in their towns and cities, especially those in Western capitals, in efforts to shake support by their respective governments of Israel, if only by omission of censure, for those killings. So far, to no avail. David Rovics is a confessed singer-songwriter, writer, anarchist dad, and lover of life, not necessarily in that order. He's been expressing his outrage in song at what's been happening in Gaza, as he has done on so many issues for so long. The result is a collection of 20 songs compiled in the album Notes from a Holocaust. He says, quote, "I wrote them to bear witness to the genocide of the Palestinian people that continues by the hour as I publish this album." David Rovics and Killing War with Music in the second half. But first, John Cavana and Pedro Cabezas defending the Santa Marta Five, El Salvador's Water Defenders. Welcome to the program, gentlemen. Now, John, the title of the report, State of Deception, it's kind of a play on words on the Bekele government's state of exception policy, if I'm reading this right. John, what is exceptional in its understanding?
Well, so we have a dictator in El Salvador who calls himself the world's coolest dictator. And he's tried to build an image of himself around the world as an effective leader who's ended gang violence in the country. What we discovered in our delegation of Canadians and U.S. folks to El Salvador late last year is that this is pure deception. He has thrown over 71,000 people in jail, including five heroes of that country, five environmental defenders, water defenders, and we'll get into that in a moment. But he's done it in the name of rounding up gangs. But what we found is that as many as half of the people in jail are innocent, or they are leaders of unions or environmental groups that he's thrown in jail for political reasons. And he's done this, the state of exception, the term that is used there, is he has gotten a Congress, which he controls, to roll back all civil liberties. He can go in and arrest anybody he wants without charges, throw them in jail, deny them access to lawyers or families, and keep them there as long as he wants. This is an abomination, and we are putting out this report in part to say to the world, wake up, this guy is not what he says he is, and we are calling on the Canadian government and the U.S. government to speak out and denounce this.
Well, we have... the report acknowledges that he has been successful, at least in curbing the gang violence there, which was a huge problem, a massive problem. Everybody agrees. And he still has massive support. There's an election coming up, and we'll get into that later too, just next month, where it's a constitutional challenging move he's making. But to be fair, I mean, I've seen the pictures of the prisons and the prisoners under a martial control, and it looks like a frightening vision of a dystopic future. But we have to say that he has done what he said he would and curb the violence, and he's retained a lot of political support throughout the country, hasn't he?
Well, let me just say a word on that. And then, Pedro, you were down there in El Salvador, so go ahead and pick up on this. Yes, he has reduced gang violence, but as we put in the report, he's replaced it with state violence. So we found in our trip through El Salvador a climate of fear there. People are afraid to speak out because they're afraid now. Before they were afraid they'd be harmed by gangs. Now they're afraid that their children or they will be arrested and put in jail on charges of terrorism. So he's replaced one kind of violence with another. But Pedro, you know this situation better.
Well, yeah. Now, Pedro, I could, before we get to exactly what's going on the streets there in El Salvador, could you tell me first who the MARTA Five are? Can we get an understanding of who these men are?
Well, these are five environmentalist leaders who, back in between the year 2004, 2005, up to 2017, they were active leaders in the anti-mining movement. Movement that grew from Cabañas to the national and international level was able to press the government, the legislative assembly, all these national institutions to prohibit mining in 2017. After 12 years of organizing, after 12 years of protests, and after losing more than five different environmental leaders to violence against environmentalists. So we believe that because of the role they played during that time to prohibit mining, the government has now targeted them to demobilize not only the local leadership in Cabañas that could potentially become an opposition to the intention of the government to introducing mining back into the country, but also to instill fear on other leaders that may be thinking that they can oppose government policies, and to instill the fear that, you know, they could also be arrested and charged and put in jail without charges that can be substantiated in courts.
Well, and being put in jail might even be the least of their problems. When you mentioned the assassinations of leaders, that's rife across Latin America, across the world. It's an amazing achievement that El Salvador was, I don't know of another jurisdiction that managed to ban mining, including my Canada, where we are totally at the mercy of these transnational corporations that befoul the environment with impunity.
Yes, and I think, you know, in the whole Central American region, we have had some degrees of success in trying to stop the impacts of mining companies. El Salvador being one of the most successful examples, but recently we just saw the uprising of the whole country in Panama against a contract that was given to a Canadian company, First Quantum. But at the same time that we have seen that success through the region in terms of stopping mining companies, we also have seen the increase of criminalization against environmental defenders. If you look at the Global Witness report, Honduras, Guatemala, Nicaragua are some of the countries that have the highest rates of criminalization and murders against environmentalists, and El Salvador is quickly catching up to the rest of these countries.
Yeah, well, John, you and I, at least I am, I suspect you are too, are old enough to remember the 1980s and the Reagan dirty wars across Latin America, but El Salvador was the center of that. When you look at what's happening now under this regime as they become more totalitarian in nature, does that view bring back ghosts of the Reagan-Bush past?
Well, yeah, great question, Chris. And I know many of your listeners, there are a lot of amazing people in Canada who helped fight for human rights during those dirty wars, even going back the decade before to U.S. and Canadian involvement with the dictatorship in Chile. So, of course, today brings us back to that time. Now, a key thing most people don't know is that the root of the gangs in El Salvador actually comes out of that civil war. The military in El Salvador during the civil war, which included death squads, was trained by the U.S. military. It had a policy where if you fought on the government side in that civil war, you could only fight for 2 years and then you left. A lot of people left and went to the United States. A lot of them went to Los Angeles, where there were the beginnings of gangs. And these people had been trained by the U.S. into being ruthless killers. And the gangs welcomed them. And the Salvadorans from that, U.S.-trained Salvadorans, entered those gangs, made them much more violent in the United States. And then when finally the U.S. started deporting people back to El Salvador, it included many of those gang members. So we in the United States are at the core of what became a huge gang problem in El Salvador. We in a sense, are partially responsible for this. So it's even more important for us to be looking for solutions. But Chris, I think the key issue here, and this is being debated all over Latin America, where there is an increase in violence, a lot of it drug trade, drug traffic-induced violence, is what's the best solution? Bukele in El Salvador is saying democracy is not the solution. You got to crack down and throw people in jail. Other countries, Chile, Colombia, others are trying to deal with it in a more democratic and a more open way. So this is an important story, not just for El Salvador, it is for the whole world. Do we reject democracy to make the streets safe, or are there ways to approach it that respect people's basic rights? And I think what where Pedro and myself and the others on the delegation came down in the end is it is vital to protect the democratic rights of people. If you trample those the way Bukele is, then you are trampling everything that we believe in. And this is where we want the Canadian government to speak out and the U.S. government to speak out. He claims his only goal is to stop gangs. Then why are there 17 labor leaders in his prisons? Why does he have charges against these five water defenders? Why is he putting in jail workers from city governments that haven't been paid because his government is not doing so well on an economic stance? Why are people from city government jobs who have not been paid and who've been protesting, just wanting to be paid, why have they been thrown in jail? So is this really a war against gangs, or is it a war for totalitarian control and for putting any opponents of Bukele in prison? And we found it's the latter. And that's why we need to be alarmed. We need to speak out. And we all need to seek for alternative ways to handle gang violence and drug-related violence, but using democratic means, respecting people's basic rights to a lawyer, basic rights to civil liberties, and so on.
Yeah. Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Pedro Cabezas and John Cavana. We're talking about their part in the recent report, State of Deception, dealing with the situation in El Salvador and the arrest in this case, but in thousands of other cases, of the Santa Marta five men known locally as water defenders, supposedly on, well, let's get to the grounds. Pedro, what are the actual grounds that the five men are arrested under? They're not being arrested for being effective environmental defenders, are they?
No, the government's utilizing their participation during the 80s in a guerrilla army that's operated in the region of Cabañas back in the 80s. And they have been charged technically a war crime. But with a charge that literally there is no evidence that they committed this charge. They all have alibis that they were not present during the time that the crime was supposed to have happened in that region. There is no direct witnesses. They're relying on a second degree witness that says that he heard that they committed the crimes, literally, you know, like it's a hearsay. And they haven't presented any material proof of that happening. And this is a crime that occurred over 34 years ago, that under a circumstance that there is a law, the 1992 National Reconciliation Law, that pretty much gave amnesty to all the FMLN combatants that were not engaged in any action that is considered a crime against humanity. It gave them an amnesty so that they could depose arms and then join civilian life as regular people. They were allocated plots of land. They were allocated training opportunities and the possibility of participating in the political life. So all these men were part of this guerrilla structure. Then they became community activists in Cabana, and they founded the Association for the Development of El Salvador, based in Cabanas. And they have done for like the last 30 years tremendous work in the community. They through their association, they have reached a lot of communities that the government has never been able to provide services, and they have provided education services, they have provided access to water projects, they have provided community development projects, alternative agriculture, and well beyond their area in Cabanas, but they have gone through five different departments of El Salvador. So their work has extended at the national level. And at the same time, they have become really well-known activists in the defense of the environment. So what we believe is that the government is utilizing this old charge that they could potentially lay against them to criminalize them. But so far, they have not presented any evidence. And without evidence, a judge in a judicial system that is co-opted by the government decided to keep them under detention under dismal conditions in jail for more than 8 months, where they did not have access to their families, they did not have access to a lawyer, they did not have access to medical services. All of these men are already elderly, over 60 years old. They all suffer from chronic conditions, health conditions that were not attended to, and became very critical during the time that they were in jail. Now, but we believe that, you know, we're not opposed to any war crimes. As a matter of fact, we advocate for all the war crimes to be investigated by the government. But in these circumstances, the burden of the proof is on the state, and they haven't provided any proof that that they actually committed these war crimes. On the other hand, which we find very suspicious, is that Santa Marta, the community where these men come from, is a community that during the war was a victim of many military incursions that led to massacres that are well documented by the army, that are well documented by journalists, and they're well documented by the people that since the end of the war have been demanding that these massacres were investigated. There is the Lempa River massacre, the San Gregorio massacre, the Santa Cruz massacre, where hundreds of people actually died due to military operations in the area. And these massacres have not been investigated. No charges have been laid, and no consequences are being paid by the military, well-known military commanders at the time that were leading these military operations. Not one charge has been laid against them. And we see that contradiction. You know? On the one hand, you want to investigate a war crime with very little evidence. On the other hand, you are not investigating real crimes that there is overwhelming evidence that they occurred, and there could be charges that could be laid against military commanders that were operating during the war.
Yeah, and this is what really fascinates me, John, too, is that I'm sure that the Bukele government, they realize that they're acting out of step with the amnesty provisions of the reconciliation legislation that's been in place. And it was groundbreaking at the time, I recall, and back in 1992, that they were moving forward and getting El Salvador out of this decades-long nightmare that it had been in. Is Bukele and the government's invoking of this past terrible time, and in such a way, bringing back many of the same kinds of abuses of power as Pedro is elucidating with letting military crimes against humanity go by the wayside, which is not in the spirit of the reconciliation law, which is in fact explicitly mentioned in it that it should not be excluded. is what do you think that the government's trying to do? Is this some kind of gaslighting or shock therapy on the psyche of the people of El Salvador?
You know, I think what he's trying to do, keep in mind this man who loves to walk around with looking cool with a baseball cap on backwards. He's in his early 40s. He's 41 years old. I think he is counting on the fact that over half of the Salvadoran population are young, that most people living in El Salvador today do not remember the Civil War. And he's trying to erase that history. He's saying that was he's trying to rip up this peace accord. He's trying to say that was a divisive, bad, violent history. I am leading you into a new era. Now, this is where historical memory is so key. And this is where Canadians and people in the U.S. and other countries that were part of this movement to end that brutal civil war are critical. That peace agreement that Pedro has referred to that was signed in 1992, ending a civil war that killed 75,000 people in a small country, that peace accord became not just the symbol, it became a model for other peace agreements in Colombia and elsewhere. It is critical to helping countries who've been torn apart by violence, often violence that came out of the Cold War. It was the U.S. that backed and Reagan that backed that horrible regime. That history is so critical. That peace agreement allowed a country to heal. And he is attempting to tear that apart and say, I'm the new cool dictator for the future. We can't let it happen. And I really do want to say to your listeners, Chris, that it is amazing to watch the history of people in our countries, the U.S. and Canada, fighting alongside people in Pedro's country, El Salvador, both in helping to end that horrible civil war and pushing for a peace agreement. And then, as Pedro has alluded to, in a 14-year struggle of people led by people on the ground in El Salvador who said, we've got to save our rivers, we've got to save our water from toxic mining. It was an international effort. There was a group called International Allies that Pedro helped lead that brought people from Canada. You had Mining Watch Canada, Council of Canadians, other civil society groups in Canada that provided solidarity. And this day, when we're sitting here with five of our friends who were leaders of that struggle, with charges against them, clearly false charges against them, again, it is groups in Canada and the United States, Australia, and elsewhere that are coming together to fight for that. So we've got a model here of how to take on dictators and use everything in our powers. And just to the point of your question about Bukele, a lot of the people in this fight are older. They remember the peace agreements. They remember how important that period was, but they are now joined by the next generation in El Salvador, Canada, in the U.S. that are standing up for basic democratic principles, and in this case, basic environmental principles, working and fighting for these people. And this is where I just want to challenge your government, Chris, in Canada, and mine in the United States. They say they are supporting democracy. We know behind the scenes, the Canadian government has a long history of using its embassies to support Canadian mining companies. This is a moment of truth for our governments. Do they stand up for civil society leaders who have been arrested in El Salvador and say this is critical to democracy, or do they stay silent in the face of this, quote, cool dictator?
Well, Pedro, maybe you can answer that question better than I can. We don't hear much news about what our government gets up to here in Canada. What has the Canadian government said so far in El Salvador about the arrest of the Santa Marta Five, if anything?
There has not been any official position from the Canadian government. We have met with the Canadian ambassador and myself and a number of Canadians that are working closely with different organizations in El Salvador. And they are reluctant to make any public position against the government or against any of the violations that the government is doing. And, you know, like, this is not an uncommon position. We've heard the same from officials from the United States, from the European Union, and many other their opinions are that they prefer to engage with the government in a quiet way rather than be shut down by the government if they start denouncing what they do publicly. They do, I think, understand what's going on in El Salvador. They're seeing Bukele as a dictator, or they're seeing the process in which Bukele is becoming a dictator, but they are not publicly engaging with it. We've heard from some members of parliament in Canada that have urged the Canadian government to the Foreign Affairs Department, for instance, to get more engaged and publicly speak out against the acts of Bukele in El Salvador, but we haven't been successful. Same thing in the United States. We've had members of Congress that have publicly come out against Bukele's actions, but more and more we see the diplomats of the United States, the State Department, reaching a rapprochement with El Salvadoran authorities. We do have a really good number of civil society organizations from Canada, like John has mentioned, Mining Watch Canada, the United Church, the University of Western Ontario, many civil society organizations that have been very vocal, and we appreciate that, and we know that we can count on their support, but in terms of official channels, it's being complicated.
Yeah, well, that sounds very typical for Canada, and as mentioned, as you mentioned earlier, there was a Canadian mining company. Well, Canadian mining companies are all over Central America, all over Latin America, all over Africa, and many times those are Canadian only in name. The way our investment structure is up here, the name brass nameplate corporations set up here, especially in the mining sector, and that's an ongoing thing. And the Canadian government, no matter what color its jersey, they support that. John, finally, we're fast out of time. Can you recommend, John, how our listeners can find out more about State of Deception and get involved, perhaps, in helping the Santa Marta Five and other issues of extraction and at the expense of environment and indigenous rights down in Latin America?
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Chris, and this has been a great discussion. I would say go to the website of the two places where you'll find the report are the website of Mining Watch Canada, fantastic organization, and my own organization, Institute for Policy Studies. And there you'll also find an inspiring book about this whole story called The Water Defenders, How Ordinary People Saved the Country from Corporate Greed. It's something which we can learn a great deal from, but we would love to have more people in Canada join in the protests. And please do turn to our friends at Mining Watch Canada to do that.
Yeah, Canadians definitely could learn a lot about how to protect our environment up here because we do a woeful job. And finally, Pedro, I was afraid of trying the acronym for the Central America Alliance on Mining. Can you say that acronym? And is that acronym? And is that the best way for people to find out the work, especially in Spanish, that you guys are doing?
Yes, you can find it through ACAFREMIN. It's the Central American Alliance on Mining, but also you can find information through the National Roundtable Against Mining in El Salvador. That also, it's a national coalition at the national level that has led the fight against mining historically. So those are the two places where you can find information in Spanish.
Well, Pedro Cabezas, John Kavanagh, thanks a lot for coming on the show today.
Great to be with you.
Thank you for having us.
And I want everyone else to stick around because I'm going to be back after the break with David Rovics, and we're going to talk about his new album and about the situation continuing in Gaza. Thanks again, guys. When nothing is as it's presented.
It's a bit like discovering that your favorite uncle that's taken you for walks in the park, ever that he's really a serial abuser.
You need a different source. Guerrilla Radio, a century of news every Thursday and Saturday.
If a song could bring us together across the planet that gave us birth to act as one, bring peace and justice